So the meeting to order, and we have the author of our first bill here, is here, Representative Rick Hansen. Explain, and Mr. Noble, explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. House File 83, I originally introduced 2 years ago during the special session to try to get some additional money for the legislative auditor. Since that time, I've been named chair of the Legislative Audit Commission. I have the auditor here with me, and this is a way to attempt to provide some additional audit coverage for the unelected boards, and then also to recoup some dollars to help be funding the legislative auditor. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Noble.
Mr. Noble.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this bill would allow us to recoup money in the fees that are paid by four organizations that we audit. Three metropolitan organizations, the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, Mosquito Control District, and the Airports Commission, and then the fourth being the what is called the Agricultural Society, but it's actually the State Fair as we know it. We have jurisdiction and responsibility to audit those organizations, and they do pay for those audits by statute. But currently that money goes into the general fund. And the idea behind this bill is that while it might have made sense some years ago for that money to stay in the general fund and for the legislature to simply pay for the Office of the Legislative Auditor all the services that it provides through an appropriation, the reality is that no longer occurs. And so as we look for some reasonable way to stabilize our funding and stabilize our staffing, we thought this was an appropriate way to do that. It would amount to approximately $120,000 a year.
Okay. Any question? You know it breaks my heart to do this, Jeff.
Madam Chair, there is an alternative way to do it, and which is the approach that the Senate has decided, and that is to maintain the funds currently going into the general fund, but simply appropriate an additional $120,000 to the legislative auditor.
But the problem is, that's what we did over all these years, and that was fine. But the problem is it's somehow very easy to just remove that appropriation whenever it sits there. So,
and that is the risk, Madam Chair.
Even though it breaks my heart, until we get some more stable idea of the fact that we can take money into the general fund and look at how much money is coming out and appropriate that money out, I'm going to go with this. At this moment, I feel more comfortable going with this. So, okay.
And Madam Chair, I'm comfortable with either way. I certainly understand your concerns, as well as the Senate, and I'd be happy to be present during the conference committee when this is resolved.
Okay. But I think that, when this was cut, it was just so terminally dumb that, it was hard to fathom. But anyway.
Madam Chair, I think the legislative auditor and his staff have a high degree of respect that we want to make sure that we keep high-quality people and that we fund them, and there are eyes and ears on the system working, and we want to make sure they're funded to the point where they can do their jobs and keep their people. And so although this may be somewhat extraordinary, I think we want to look at this and give you a tool to use in funding the legislative auditor.
Okay, thanks. Are there any questions on House File 83? Okay, if there's no objection, we'll lay over House File 83 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. Committee of 100. Amendment section. Okay, House File 1519 with Representative Murphy. Nancy Sack and Paul Mandel are going to testify, so we can tell the audience. want to send a page to Carl that we're expecting about it. Hopefully we'll get to your author, but we're going to have you start without your author. Let's go.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Nancy Stark. I am Executive Secretary of the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. Many of you know us as the CAP Board. I will go through my presentation, and hopefully Representative Murphy will be here to join us. I might add Representative Murphy is our newest House member on the CAP Board, newly appointed by the Speaker, and we are very excited about her coming on board. I'd like to go over the data and the information on our special request. When we presented a month ago, I noted the Governor had recommended that the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board Statute 15B be amended for the Board to be reimbursed on a permanent basis for review of capital improvements within the capital area. We are grateful that Representative Murphy has included this in her bill 1519. The Governor, however, did not recommend the CAP Board's one-time request of $65,000 to update the Board's comprehensive plan and zoning rules per Minnesota Statutes Chapter 473. By statute, the CAP Board is a local government unit, and every 10 years, each unit must review and update their comp plan as well as their governing controls, which includes our zoning rules and design guidelines. The one-time request of $65,000 will involve identifying deficiencies, advisory review, hiring of consultants, writing of the SONAR, printing for public notice, and final review and adoption by the Board. And this we anticipate doing over the next 2 years. The CAP Board is subject to APA, Administrative Procedures Act, which involves administrative law judges, state registry publication, and all pieces of rulemaking. I would state that publicizing these days has, the cost per page has doubled since we did our comp plan and zoning guidelines nearly 8.5 years ago. It is my understanding that the Governor thinks this work to meet state law can be done within our existing base budget. As I have testified previously, the CAP Board needs not only an adjustment to our base budget, but the one-time funding to meet state law and this increased volume of work. Otherwise, we continue to remain a part-time state agency, as we have for the past 4 years. The Board is pleased. Representative Murphy has also included the one-time request.
Our esteemed author is here. Actually,
would you like us to back up?
Yes. Representative Murphy, we're getting the explanation, so you can say a few words.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You get to
say a few words about your bill, too.
You know, I don't want to interrupt the flow, because I know Ms. Stark is going to do a better job than I. So I'm just asking for your support for House File 1519, which provides an appropriation, a one-time appropriation of $65,000 to the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board for expenses related to review and potential amendment of its comprehensive plan for the capital area, and I apologize for being slightly tardy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Happens at this time. Okay. And actually, I'll move that House File 1519 be before the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, in conclusion, the Board is pleased that Representative Murphy is here to introduce House File 1519 on the Board's behalf for the one-time $65,000 funding.
Okay. I actually do have one question about that. Because the CAP board, you know, was actually originally a creation of the city of St. Paul, who was appalled with some of the things that the, or the thought, the inspiration behind it, because of the awful things at the Capitol, that were happening in the Capitol area. And do any of the other public bodies that are arranged in the CAP board contribute to this plan? Is there any possibility of that?
Madam Chair, the CAP board was created in 1967 by the legislature. So in preparing the comprehensive plan, we seek the consults of not only the city of St. Paul, but the other district units of government or local citizens groups. So it's widespread that we have sought information and also consultation on the parts and pieces for our comp plan.
Okay. But you are responsible for the basic funding for getting it out.
Yes, we are responsible, and we have a 60-block area within the Capital District that we maintain that is void of the St. Paul zoning regulations. They are strictly CAP board zoning and design guidelines.
Okay. Any questions with either Representative Murphy or Ms. Stark? Okay, then we'll, if there's no objection, we'll lay 1519 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Members. I'm delighted to visit with you.
Okay. And thank you for the terrific job you did on the bill.
Thank you.
We have Representative Hart.
Madam Chair, I would be more than happy to move House File 137 to whatever destination you would like it to go, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay. First of all, it turns out we have the Senate file in front of us.
Oh, the Senate file. Okay. So Senate file 255, I'd be more than happy to move forward.
We'll end up to be a layover for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
That's
if they guess what the Senate wants to. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And I discussed with your qualified aide here that the Senate file is a standalone bill, so whatever it takes within the system, it's already passed through their floor and a 66-0 vote. So however this matches up with it, it works for me. I don't care whether it's included or if it runs alone, just as long as it rides to the finish line. We have sometimes, you know.
I know, yes.
I'm sure you do, I don't.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
I don't know.
This expands the Commissioner of Administration's authority for targeted groups for businesses to include small businesses that are majority veteran-owned and veteran-operated. And we have two concerns here. Or two reasons for wanting to expand that. One is right now the destruction of businesses owned by veterans that are being called into service, and they'll be in for 6 months or in a year, and when they come back, then their business is not a very healthy thing to come back to. The customers are lost and contracts are lost. Also, in the potential of recruiting groups to come into Minnesota in the time when we have the baby boomers are going on to retirement, that they can come in and set up businesses and have a little bit of motivation to do that. We do have some qualified speakers, but they are actually working on their businesses today, but some of you did get to hear them speak, and they were quite awesome at doing that presentation. This is not, I don't think, a forever and ever. I think each of these groups are reviewed according to the need on a basis. I think there is a large study going on now for the groups that are in there, and I would assume that the veterans would have to go through those studies in the future. We do have people from the department to answer any of the specific questions for them. There, as you noticed, there was a note on this. I would argue that note is too high, but I'm not going to because I know that Mr. Severson here, who is a co-author, has been working on an incubator from private businesses to help veterans come together to create business. So with that knowledge, I suspect that type of money is going to be needed. And co-author Severson would speak to this issue for a second and then take any questions that you might have, Madam Chair and committee members.
Okay. Before we turn to Representative Severson, the Venner pause, I'd like to point out that the Senate did pass the bill, but they totally ignored the fiscal note. And so it's now, the cost for this is now, and we're a little less likely to do that here. And I've learned after 8 years of Republican responsibility being drummed into me that we shouldn't do things like that. The reason is we can't. So I'm just saying why we can't just pass the Senate bill out. We need to either, if we're going to do it either separately or include it, we need to wait till our whole financial package is done. But it is the governor's rec now. Which
I appreciate your wisdom. I think if the Senate would have taken a look at the history of the financing of this department, they would know the reason that money had to be added in. And that's because a few years ago they had 3 employees, and then when the cuts came, they went down to 1 employee, and they couldn't get the job done, so they went 1.5. So they're at bones plus a little tissue. And if you add work to them, they're going to need some staff to do it. And so this not only gives them staff to do that, but it gives them staff to better do what they were doing before the cuts came. So,
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is, this particular legislation is extremely meaningful. Now, we've been in correspondence with numerous veterans who are coming back after being deployed for extended periods of time who are veteran-owned businesses, and they're having problems getting traction again. And we do have some provisions through a couple of sources through the Department of Economic Development. But this would go a long way in not just helping out those who are coming back to reestablish their business by giving them some preferential footing on the state contract side, but it also goes a long way in recruiting the talent to this state. The individuals that Representative Hodge was talking about are involved in what's called Semper Fi LLC, two Marine Corps majors who came back and specialized in security issues. Now, a lot of times when you're talking about security, we see it from a civilian perspective. When you see it from a military perspective, these individuals have been overseas numerous places, and they have seen a lot of different scenarios. So they have a lot to offer. But typically, our civilian side does not see those expertise or those skills or even the implementation of those skills in a separate arena like the military, the way they do typically try to relate to the civilian side. So they have a tremendous skill. And unfortunately, we are having a hard time realizing those skills in the civilian sector. This helps to make that transition. And so it does that. It also speaks to a larger part of the governor's package, which is recruiting military people to Minnesota by the first process being eliminating the pension penalty or basically taxing their pension to get some of these individuals who are retiring coming, bring their skills back to a community that wants a community that they can start a second career in. And they're coming with 75% of them have bachelor's degrees, 50% have master's degrees, and they come back with individual skills of management and disciplines that really create a fix for the gray tsunami that we hear so much about. So this is part of that initiative, and it's none of the governor's bill is standalone. It's all kind of integrated in. So I would strongly encourage us as representatives and as policy makers to kind of try and get the vision. How do we try and address the tsunami that's coming down here and recruit talented people to this state? And this is one of the ways we can certainly do that, and this particular part of that legislation is part of that. And Madam Chair, I think we've got a couple testifiers that
if you have questions for them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hausen Severson. I'm wondering if anybody has brought up the issue of constitutionality in any of your prior stops, and
whether there's been an opinion rendered by anybody like the Attorney General's office of whether this would be likely or unlikely to be found constitutional.
In my humble opinion, and I always say I'm not a lawyer, but I did watch the O.J. trial for 13 hours in a row. But yes, that has been brought up. And actually, this meets the test really, really well because it doesn't have to meet the test. And this is a group of veterans, and they can be put into this category because of their past service and because of that veteran service. So it isn't like putting a minority group in. That is what I was told. And nobody did challenge that.
And Madam Chair, Representative Portman, I think Mr. Rhodes can speak to that specifically, and I think that would probably be a good thing to have come on down.
Okay, let's bring someone, whoever else you'd like to speak. Oh, Ms. Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kent Allen. I'm the Director of the Materials Management Division of the Department of Administration. There can be constitutional issues as it relates to giving preferences in purchasing programs. The federal courts have looked at the issue and have held preferences based on race to what's called a strict scrutiny standard, and that's one of the reasons we have a request in currently to do a fairly detailed and academically oriented disparity study to look at the actual utilization of businesses versus their availability in the local marketplace. And we need to do that level of analysis before we can provide a preference for on the basis of race. On the basis of gender, the preference is slightly less strict, but nonetheless requires that sort of academic analysis. When you get to a preference based on service to your country, our belief is that the courts would find that to be something within the purview of the legislature to award on the basis of your view that that's meritorious conduct. It's not something innate to an individual such as race and gender.
Okay. Is there anyone else, Mr. Horst, that you'd like to?
No, we're just standing for questions.
Okay. Representative Sigmund?
Madam Chair, Representative Haas, you made an interesting comment that I picked up on. You said that once we put the veterans into this targeted group, that it isn't always forever. They're reviewed every so often. Targeted groups are reviewed. Since we've had the targeted groups for the additional preference in the bids, we will have taken the place. Which, if any, groups have ever been eliminated from the targeted groups?
Those standards are going to be eliminated by analysis and not by political. You know what I mean? I don't know if this standard would ever, if the veterans would probably be a political analysis and determining is this really what you want to be doing 20 years from now or 10 years from now, say there was no war and no difficulty and businesses weren't being destroyed. Right now you have some businesses that are really being torn up. If you can imagine yourself running a business and being pulled out of that business and coming back and saying, where are my clients? You know, so this is a different time. So what probably would be changing here is the environment for that veteran business and not the statistical analysis of prejudice against an ethnic group.
Madam Chair, I didn't do a very good job explaining.
Well, Representative Sigmund, I think that's related to the disparity study, which is also in this legislature. If there aren't disparities, they go.
Madam Chair,
Representative Hines, maybe I didn't explain that question very well.
I probably didn't answer it very well. I understand your question.
You said that there are targeted groups, preference and bids, and that they're reviewed occasionally, and that if you win the targeted group, doesn't mean that it's going to be there forever. I thought
that's true, and my question was
out of the current target, forget the veterans being out of the targeted group status we have right now, which group has ever been eliminated from the targeted group status?
I would have to ask staff to do that, but I again repeat that I think if they don't meet that standard of that study, you're going to be challenged automatically. Let's do the chair here.
That's not my question.
We'll go to Mr. Allen for that. But I know that at some point the standards for what a women-owned business was were dramatically changed. And I think also the standards for a black-owned business were distinctly changed. So groups that had been getting service through the disparities, they were eliminated. But
Madam Chair and Representative Swiggan, that's correct. When we do this disparity study, it leads to a redefinition of which groups are and are not eligible. I don't have the grid in front of me, but it breaks it out by specific racial category, by gender, by type of business, by metro versus greater Minnesota business, and by the dollar value of the state contract. And businesses can be eligible in one or more of those many categories. I believe the group that currently is eligible in the most categories is African-American-owned businesses. The group that's eligible in the fewest categories is Asian-owned businesses. But as we do these studies, there are different groups that move in or out based on that analysis.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members.
Okay. And I guess if there's no objection, we'll move that Senate File 255 be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Is there any way that we can move this out? I guess it would just be the fiscal note that's attached.
No, we cannot move, Mr. Chairman, Representative. We cannot move any bill that has a fiscal note out until we. It could be moved separately, but only after we've done our omnibus bill.
Okay.
So it can possibly still go separately if that's what we decide we want to do, but we have to make sure that the considerations are included in our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members.
Okay. Representative, anyone know where Representative Simon is supposed to be, or Representative Mariani? Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
I'll move a file
1616.
I'll move that House File 1616 be before us. Okay, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the Legislative Commission to End Poverty. Members, we created this commission in a bipartisan manner last year. Members were appointed to it just a month ago. The members are myself, Representative Otremba, Representative Walker, Representative Moe, and Representative Slawick on the DFL side, and on the GOP side, it's Representative Bruce Anderson, Lanning, Abler, and Representative Nordis. And Madam Chair, this is a pretty simple bill, quite frankly. It asks for an appropriation to do the work of the commission in the next year, next 2 years. And I'm just pulling my notes together here real quickly. I was an instrumental in putting this together last year, but the thinking here, members, was that this legislature really wanted to tackle this issue in regard, within the context of huge changes that are happening in our state. You all know about the huge demographic changes that we're going through, with the bulk of our baby boomer workforce retiring here in short order, and all that happening against increasing global competition that's going to continue to influence and shape the nature of our economy. And so there are a number of members on both sides of the aisle who looked at that and said, you know, what that means is that even our small levels of poverty relative to other states becomes a really big issue for us in terms of being able, at least from an economic argument, being able to maximize our human capital potential in the state. So the commission will, with that as a backdrop, basically engage the public in an open discussion, research-based, good analysis of the interplay between poverty and our economic future and stability, as well as our whole healthy community stability. And the precedent here is really similar to when I first came to the legislature, Madam Chair. This body had for a number of years struggled with the rising health care, uninsured health care issue, and created bodies that eventually led to the creation of Minnesota Care. And I'm told that periodically this state has done this kind of efforts over many decades, where we have this style of Minnesota where we engage big issues as a way to frame up and really look at policy differently, and then coming back with policy recommendation for legislative action. So it's our hope that we'll be able to put before our colleagues in short order a new way to think about poverty, a new way to think about an appropriate and powerful role for government vis-a-vis issues of poverty, and again, do that within the context of a whole different society and a whole different economic realities and challenges before us. So, Madam Chair, I'm going to stop there. I'm going to ask my testifiers to share a few thoughts with you, and then we can talk a little bit about numbers here real quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Brian Rushi with the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. And the origins of this commission really did start in the faith community. There was an initiative to end poverty by 2020 that has been put out there by the Lutheran Church, especially the St. Paul Area Synod, and then other faith communities joined on. And it's grown by leaps and bounds over the last couple of years. And this legislative commission is a way, I think, to engage all the citizens of the state in a conversation about ending poverty by 2020. We think that it is one of those things that if we kind of get out of our ordinary silos and have cross-jurisdictional conversations as citizens and as legislators in a commission setting, we can put a roadmap together where we can solve this problem. Because as Representative Mariani said, in Minnesota, the scale is solvable. We have that blessing. It's also true that we have the fastest rise in deep poverty in the nation. That was reported just, I think, last week. There was some media stories about Minnesota being number one, the fastest growing state in terms of people in deep poverty. But we think that, you know, we're ready for this conversation. $250,000 was appropriated last session. We see this commission working for just about another year and a half, sunsetting in December of 08. And the last time Minnesota did this was in 1987 and 1988. There was a governor's commission on poverty, and you'll find in that report some recommendations that did bring some initiatives online, both in the governmental and in the private sector. So it was an effective exercise and an important thing to do again. We need the time and space to have these cross-jurisdictional conversations. We think it's an opportunity to create a forum for the citizens to engage. And we can learn a lot, and this is my last point, from what other states and countries have done. Great Britain, in particular, set out about 5 years ago with a Blue Ribbon Commission that put together a roadmap, and now they're like 5 years into this experience. And they set up milestones, and they are starting to reach them. They've reduced childhood poverty by 20%, I think it was, and they were lamenting the fact that they didn't meet their goal, which was 25. That's the kind of atmosphere we think we can create with this commission and the engagement of the citizens around this issue. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Arnie Anderson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Community Action Partnership. Our association has 28 private nonprofits scattered around the state. We've been working in the area of poverty for many, many years. First of all, I'd like to echo Representative Mariani's comments. We couldn't be more thrilled by that vision, and I'm not going to repeat any of his testimony. I really just have one simple point that I would like to make to illustrate the potential for this commission. In community action, just last year alone, we had nearly 40,000 Minnesotans donate nearly 2 million hours of time and their hearts to work on behalf of low-income Minnesotans. And the fact is, community action is small. There are a lot of people who have never even heard of community action. When you include the faith communities and our nonprofit partners, we're talking about thousands upon thousands of people. We can fill up that new Twin Stadium several times over with these volunteers and with our hearts. And we're thrilled about the prospect of this legislative commission providing some fresh direction for all those efforts and all those talents. And with that, I'll say thank you very much.
I've sent staff to get a copy of the establishment of what was said in the law. But you want to just tell us a little bit about what and Carlos, Representative Mariani, did you say that the members were only just appointed, or were there members appointed last year that? No.
No, Madam Chair, the legislation required that the appointments happen in this year. And so I believe it was mid-February that the appointments were made on both the Senate and the House side.
Oh, okay.
So we haven't quite started yet.
And is this session law? Didn't get into the statute. So it's session law?
It was part of the supplemental budget bill, had its own article.
Yeah, but it looks as if it wasn't codified into the Minnesota statute. It was just done in set. That's correct. I'm being told that that's correct. That this is, so there was no appropriation for last year. This was the first year that an appropriation is asked for.
No, Madam Chair, there was a $250,000 appropriation in the supplemental budget bill last session. It was in the early education article.
Okay. Well, I assume that wasn't spent at all.
Correct.
And Madam Chair, we do have...
So is that canceled now?
No, it isn't. And Madam Chair, we do have an approach here, I think, that would ease this committee's ability to respond positively to this. I wonder, do you want to
anyone,
run through it?
We could have copies made of this if anyone wants to see it.
Madam Chair, my understanding from Greg Kubinger at the Legislative Coordinating Commission is that the $250,000 does not cancel because it's an appropriation to the legislature, a legislative body. And we sat down together and sketched out a very tightly drawn budget. And so
We have not, I don't think any of us here have seen that. And we would kind of like, I think we'd actually like to see that budget if someone would get it to us at some point.
I have a copy here if the committee would be willing to make copies and distribute. The bottom line, Madam Chair, is that if the $250,000 appropriated last year carries over, then we need an additional $100,000 for the totality of the commission's work between now and December of 2008. So we can make an amendment to this bill to get that number in place. We have the $250,000 in this bill just as placeholders.
Madam Chair, I should say that the Legislative Coordinating Commission evidently will be talking about this issue shortly.
We'll get it. We're going to get the rules and LCC budget. We're going to get that next week, and this will be part of that presentation. Thursday. Next week. Right.
Madam Chair, I'm not quite sure of the process, but clearly if the commission does something to dig into the $250,000, then that obviously, I think what you'll see here in a moment are the budgetary needs, and our hope is that $250,000 won't be touched by the commission this year, so that remains available. And so, therefore, when you look at that budget, that leaves about a $100,000 need. So, as opposed to the $250,000 we have here before you, the request then would be $100,000. But that's assuming that the commission does not touch the current $250,000 that's there. There is a little bit of room there because we want to make sure that we don't wait until July 1st to start work. We really want to. As soon as our session is over, is to really get it moving. And so there's a little bit of money that will be needed to be spent in this biennial still. But we figure that'll be about $100,000. Even so, that will still result in a $100,000 request in this bill. But again, assuming that the $250,000 is not touched by the commission.
Okay.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Mariani, could you just give me a little bit of a layout of what you're talking about doing with any of the dollars? I know we're going to get a budget, but perhaps before we get that, if you could just start to talk about that, please.
Sure. Madam Chair, we can't do this work unless we've got a full-time dedicated staff to do the work. There are expenses related to that. There'll be expenses related to meetings. Four hearings, four public hearings. There'll be a major gathering at the end of that. There'll be some research expenses as well as documentation expenses. And then there'll be per diem expenses for the senators and the members.
Madam Chair,
one more piece on the financial side. The Northwest Area Foundation has expressed an interest in supporting this work, especially in the area of communications.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I think I missed that part that Representative Poppy had asked for. So, and I just received this handout. So the complete $500,000 is just for costs of administrating this commission?
Madam Chair and Representative, we're expecting the total cost to actually be around $338,000. And so it's actually much, it's more modest request than what's in the bill. Again, though, our hope is that the commission will not touch the $250,000 that has been allocated. So if you subtract it out with a little bit of activity that needs to happen, add it back in for this biennial, we anticipate that the request would be $100,000. But we're projecting a total expenditure of about
$338,000.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Madam Chair? So this isn't an issue where this money would be given out as grants to different entities that are working towards this. This is just straight administrative costs.
Madam Chair and members, right, there'll be your staff costs, your meeting costs, your documents costs, your research costs. There'll be some travel costs. There'll be per diem for the senators and the members' costs. Telephones, that kind of stuff. And it's all delineated here in the budget for you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mariani. Madam Chair?
Okay, Representative Poppy.
I was wondering if staff could tell me a little bit, are there other agencies that delve into this issue? I believe the Housing Finance Agency looks at the issue of homelessness. Mm-hmm. Is there ways to have some cost savings through that? And I know I'm asking a very broad question and putting you on the spot, but is there... let me ask you this. What other agencies overlap in providing these functions?
Well,
I apologize for putting you on
the spot. No, that's okay. I think obviously the Housing Finance Agency has some programs that are relating to it. Human Services have programs that are relating to it. I think the purpose of having a legislative commission is to assemble all of these people in one place to talk about it and to see what and to try and get instead of, I guess it's a new word that we hear a lot these days, but we didn't used to hear except in terms of, hey, the issue of silos, that everyone is only looking at this issue within their own domain, and so the idea is to try and get a broad look at it, see where everything, see how everything fits together. I think it's not, the thought is not to replicate or duplicate any of the work that those other groups are doing. It's just to have the overview, one place where people are doing, I didn't know thinking was that expensive, but one place where people were doing serious thinking, not in their own agency, beyond the borders of their own agency, my guess. But
Madam Chair, to that point, I guess, if I was in a financial pinch and I saw something like this coming forward, I guess I would personally be upset. I figured it out. If we're looking at 2020, 13 years, that's $38,000, and hopefully my math is right, over $38,000 that we're looking at spending, on those each, 13 years. That's just for the $500,000 appropriation. That's one person that we could put with a great income out of poverty. And I admire the goal that you're trying to set. I'm just wondering, is there a more affordable way that we could do that? Maybe it's and we have the 2020 caucus, bipartisan caucus here, that looks at some of these issues on a big picture level. I would just hate to see that we'd be spending money that could maybe go directly to folks and give them more immediate assistance rather than,
I think, I guess I think they're hoping that the end result will be more than one family lifted out of poverty.
Sure.
And I guess one of the questions I have to ask, and I know we can look it up, is I guess the model, if you listen to Representative Mariani, was this very successful group that was ended up being called the Gang of Seven, of put together, that ended up working and talking to each other and putting together MinCare. I imagine, Mr. Boucher, you probably work with them. I don't know what the budget for that was, and I don't remember. That's something we can obviously look up and look at that. And I'm not, as I said, we're not making a decision on this today. There doesn't seem... I don't know what happened to the...
Is there any thought of no, you talked about the Northwest Area Foundation and so forth. I don't remember that I saw anything in the language that talked about raising private funds to do this work or something. Was there any?
Madam Chair, certainly for the actual implementation of recommendations, we think that all sectors, the philanthropic sector, the business sector, all sectors are going to be engaged in recommendations. But for the actual costs of the commission itself, it's holding hearings around the state for the researcher and for the staff director for a year and a half. Those are costs that we anticipate that the state legislature would fund for its own commission.
To that point, Representative Kahn, at the minimum, Representative Mariani, what would be wrong with having a clause to this bill and some others that says the legislature would be willing to pony up some money, but only as matching funds once this organization attains a certain dollar amount from private sources first?
Well, Madam Speaker and members, I leave that to the will of our colleagues here, but the issue here is this isn't an ongoing appropriation. This is a historic opportunity that we created in a bipartisan way in the last session, recognizing the historic confluence that we have right now in our state. And it's like most things in life, if you don't pay for it, you don't own it. And so the legislature is saying, this is important enough. We recognize the historic importance of this. We understand that there are potentially big policy reflection and rethinking, retooling that needs to happen here. And we're going to own that. And one of the ways we're going to own that is that we're going to pay for it. We're going to make sure that we aren't staffed just by someone out of housing so that this only takes a housing hue, for instance, or someone out of health care, so that only takes a health care hue. We're going to make sure that there's someone who staffs this, that we engage the public in such a way, that we do the research in such a way that we're scanning as broadly and as deeply outside of those old silos, outside of the current way in which we understand this issue of poverty and how we've currently structured our governmental responses to that. And so, we could certainly do that approach. I think what we're hearing is that there's at least one foundation that, regardless of what the legislature does, is willing to put up some resources to help this process and this engagement along. But I would say, members, if you own it, you pay for it. If you pay for it, you really own it.
Well, Madam Chair, I just think it's something that should be explored, and it's not just this particular bill. I mean, we're troubled by the number of groups that have come before us and said, we need some money, and they always seem to have some people in tow from outside of government, and we ask, well, who else is paying the freight on this particular project? And the troubling answer is, well, we're talking to people, or some people have expressed interest, I guess. I'd like to see some of these other stakeholders with some skin in the game. And if there's going to be a governmental appropriation, that's something we should talk about. But as I said, I think if there's going to be some other folks who are participating, I'd like to see them truly participate as well.
I understand the concept of the legislature paying for legislative hearings. But if one of these things is to be, for example, a grand public conference on it, it seems that it would be appropriate to have some outside funding go along with that. Representative Mariani.
Yes, I was just going to say that, and I don't know what the other issues that you have, and I think it's certainly a fair question for us, but this isn't any other group. This is us. Mm-hmm. This, we created this. We created this in a bipartisan way. We created it last year under Speaker Swingham's leadership with strong participation from both sides of the aisle. We said we're stepping up to provide leadership in this state to do this. And so in terms of the other issues, Representative, I don't want to venture into that. You may very well have a very good point there, but this is our work here, and it's work that we only do, quite frankly, I think, maybe once a generation or every other generation.
Madam Chair, just to be able to display it, I make a lot of mistakes. When I'm Speaker, I make mistakes.
No.
My name's been used here a couple times. Madam Chair, as you put your budget together, take $338,000 and spend it on people. Don't spend it on legislators and a couple of new bureaucratic staff people. Get rid of the commission. Send it to medical assistance. Send it to daycare signing fees. Send it to workforce development. But let's not have more per diems and two more directors. If it started last year under my leadership to that Representative Mariani, let me apologize right now.
No apology needed, Representative Sawyer.
And to Mr. Rushi, who mentioned the Lutheran support, I being a Lutheran, I would rather send it to people than send it to government. Just small advice, not politically correct, but take the money and give it to some folks.
Well, we're going to have a lot of tough decisions to make in this committee, and I'm sure your advice will be listened to.
And if not, we'll have an amendment.
And we'll vote on it. Okay, any other questions, Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, following along in what's been some of the comments have been, I just have to say, oopta, because sometimes who's going to vote against ending poverty? You know, this is a tough vote to be able to say that we would vote to not want to do that, but I have to concur that some of the comments that have been made regarding how these dollars, precious dollars, would be spent, I must admit, seem a little like they may not provide the great amount of use that they could. I understand definitely the proposal, and certainly that this is a value and that we may come up with some outcomes that will be great and serve us all well and be able to save us dollars in the end and bring people out of poverty. But probably right now there seems a little bit of a disconnect. So I just have to say, oopta.
Well, Representative Poppy, and one of the things that I'm looking at sometimes is when we send things to state government and we tell them to do it within their budget, and they say no, to do the study they need more dollars for more people, and you say, well, what are you doing all the hours of the day? I mean, you know, we might take some of that attitude towards the legislature too. Mm-hmm. We can tell people to do things without necessarily giving them as much money as they might want to do it, and you know, depending on how it fits into everyone's priorities, we'll see what gets done. And I'm not making either threats or promises. I'm just saying that we have a difficult budget to assemble, and consideration of this will be one part of it. Representative Mariani.
Yeah, Chair, just to close, I guess, I would urge members to think about the significance of the 1986 Governor's Commission on Poverty, that among other things laid the groundwork for what eventually became Minnesota Care, one of our most effective tools at fighting the uninsurance issue that many of our Minnesotans face with health care. And so members, I know this is outside of the box. There were members on both sides of the aisle who were willing to think outside of the box a year ago, just like they apparently they were in the mid-80s. And I would certainly have huge expectations that as a result of that, with this investment of energy and time and resources, we can come back with modern policies that cut across huge jurisdictions and really help to resolve one of the most endemic problems of our age, one that, while still small in Minnesota, there are some alarming statistics out there about growing in the wrong way for our state. So I would just encourage us to think about it's new, but in many ways it's not new. We've done this before, and we've been able to reap the benefits of it before. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, this isn't a direct question on the bill. I'm just wondering, I'm sure you know a lot about the issue, I know a little bit. Homelessness affects a lot of people with mental illness and alcoholism. Do you know what the percentages of people who are homeless that also are afflicted with a mental illness or alcoholism?
Madam Chair, I can point you to that. I thought last week, but I don't carry the number in my head. The Wilder Foundation, the Wilder Center for Research, just published their results of their 2006 survey of homeless people. And one of the trends that they noticed was a growing
number of homeless people are having acute mental health problems. The other trend that they identified was that there's a larger number of youth that aren't in formal shelters. And the other trend that they found was the returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan. It got some media press or media play last week, I think it was. Wilder Research Center, Survey on Homelessness. It was done in October of 06 and just published the findings, I think, last week.
Any other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you,
Madam Chair. Appreciate it.
Okay, Mr. Simon. The last question.
Representative, I move that House File 1526 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Okay, and on the last bill, I realized I didn't have the concluding. If there's no objection, we'll lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill on the Mariani bill. Okay, yeah, I have the motion by Representative Portman. Okay, Representative Fine.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill, House File 1526, is as much about philosophy as it is about dollars, I think. You're the experts, not me. You're on this committee, not me. You're the ones having to couple together the budget and make the tough decisions, not me. But this was brought to me originally by Senator Ann Rest, who I understand is chairing it in the Senate. And the basic idea is this. Right now, if you look on line 1.12 of the bill, it's $1.25 million each general election, so every two-year cycle, is appropriated to the state election campaign fund. And basically, that's somewhat inaccurate because $130,000 of that is backed out. $130,000, $65,000 per year is taken and reserved for possible or potential OAH, Office of Administrative Hearing Expenses, because remember, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe three, when the legislature decided that the county attorney shouldn't be doing this, it should be OAH. And as a result, and I wasn't privy to the discussion back then, but basically this is what happens. So the money's being diverted. Now, I think the reason I'm told that I was asked to carry this is I haven't so far, in the two campaigns I've run, opted into this program, so I'm not feathering my own nest. I'm not going to see any money from this. Some of you might, and other challengers out there and people running for office might as well. So I've got no dog in the fight. But it just seems to me, as a matter of philosophy, a little strange, and I know to Senator Rest, that people running for office, whether they're challengers or incumbents, are in essence being punished financially somewhat due to a couple possible factors. One is the number of wrongdoers out there amongst the candidate world, or, if you want to look at it a different way, the number of mischief makers who want to claim wrongdoing. Either way, whether it's actual wrongdoing or colleagues or maybe other folks out there running for office who are causing complaints under Chapter 10A or people out there bringing those complaints, whether they're meritorious or not. Either way, somebody else's conduct basically shrinks the pool. And it seems like a strange way to fund it. Again, I have the disadvantage. I wasn't in this committee when that happened. Maybe some of you were part of that deal. But it just seems to me that it's something worth revisiting and something worth considering. I also understand that in years past, the overall amount, which is $1.25 million now, was up in the neighborhood of $2 million. Now, this bill doesn't touch that. It would still be $1.25 million. And maybe you've heard other bills that do other things to that amount. I guess just the basic point is, should enforcement of Chapter 10A come out of the hides of people running for office, the vast, vast majority of whom, I've got to think, upwards of 90%, do opt into the system and would be impacted by this. And that's really it. And I leave it to you. You're the experts, not me. It's just an idea worth considering. It's $65,000 a year, and that's nothing to sneeze at. It would require an extra appropriation. I take that seriously. I know you do, too. And I know the budget is tight, and maybe finding extra money so that the pot of money that politicians use may be not one of your highest priorities when, as I've already heard, just listening to the last bill, and as Representative Swigum said, maybe it's best to give it to other places. So I sound like I'm dissing my own bill. I'm not. I just know that you
you have tough choices to make. This might not be at the top of the list, but it's an interesting idea, I think, for you to consider, which is, should it really be structured that way? Should it really be that, you know, the wrongdoers on either side, those bringing claims or those causing the claims, should cause this overall pot of money to go down? That's it. That's the bill. And
one
your hand.
Question, Representative Sun, were there any claims on this in the last election? I don't remember.
Yes.
Oh, you betcha.
Okay. Was it beyond the 130,000?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, I believe when the Office of Administrative Hearings came here and testified, they said they had gone through more than that quantity of dollars.
And, Madam Chair, if I may, and I'm not doubting that OAH would have occasion in future election cycles to use this. I guess it's just a philosophical question, and as you're piling together the bill, to consider whether this kind of weird setup makes sense to do. But I understand, you know, there's a cost to it. I mean, it's nothing to sneeze at, $65,000 a year. So I'm not minimizing it. It's just for your consideration. I'm sure you'll take it up in your omnibus bill. But I understand you have very high priorities, as we just heard, that might outpace this, and my tender feelings won't be hurt if that's mm-hmm. the case. But it's just something for you to consider.
Okay. Any other questions? I remember why we did it this way.
I think, Madam Chair, was probably for the reasons that Representative Simon stated. You know, oxes had to be gored, especially in the recent past, and we decided we'd take it out of our own hides.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Simon, I just, you know, when you said I don't want to diss my own bill, I don't think that, that it's a small matter for us that have the public have trust that people who are elected to office are elected because of their beliefs and because of popular support and not special interest groups. And so I think when we look at putting our budget together, when we look at the public financing system, it does give a lot of people a lot of trust, and it has really reduced the amount of influence, I believe, that special interests have on candidates. And so to the extent that we can strengthen that system, I mean, we need to have money out there to deal with the complaints. So I don't know if this is the way to strengthen the system. And I'm surprised we haven't seen other bills to make the pot bigger or to make the refund larger. But I think that when you compare a citizen's basic trust in democracy to some of the other things that we spend money on, I think it is a worthy expenditure of money. So you don't need to diss your bill.
Well, Madam Chair, and I understand if money grew on trees, I'm sensing that this might be a no-brainer. I don't know, but it doesn't, and you have tough decisions to make, and I honor that.
Okay.
The bill's in your hands.
Okay. Any other questions from Representative Sun? Okay, then if there's no objection, House File 1526 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. We have
Thank
minutes
you.
Before us. Representative Bigger Moon adoption of the minutes of March 15th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Next meeting is this time on Thursday. Okay. Sometime like in the next week. 27th, 28th, 29th. And I hope I talk to meeting adjourned.